This is the Citizen of Heaven podcast, a special edition, my Gilligan's Island list. I'm Hal Hammond, Citizen of Heaven, your embedded correspondent in Satan's world. Thanks for listening, sharing, and subscribing. In part three of the books episode, which aired earlier this month, I asked my guests, Edwin Crozier and Elizabeth Nowlin, to give me their list of books other than the Bible that they would want to take with them if they were going to stay indefinitely on a desert island. If you haven't checked it out, please do so, along with the other two parts of the episode. Now it's my turn. I shared my list live with the Heaven Citizens Facebook group, and now I'm sharing it with you. Enjoy. The task for today is to talk about the 10 books that I would take with me on my extended stay on the desert island. And I am I'm giving myself 10 books. If you follow the podcast, you probably know that Edwin Crozier and Elizabeth Nowlin were with me to discuss their top five books. There are two of them, so 5 plus 5 is 10. You can do the math for yourself. I'm going to do my own list here, and we got into a really, really good discussion on the, if you haven't seen it already, please tune in and listen to that. It was a great discussion, and I tried to keep my own comments minimal so I could emphasize what their opinions were. I have my list that I'm going to share with you here in just a second. Before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about what's coming in the future. We're going to be doing my top 10 lists for my most surprising books, most disappointing books, most thinky books, and best books for the last half of the year, and my best books for the entire year. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing this today, because I don't have that many weeks left in the year, and we have a lot of streams that are left that I really want to get in before the year is over. And so I didn't really have time to put this off. If we're going to do one of these every couple of weeks or so, I need to go ahead and get this knocked out if we're going to do it. And I thought the timing was good. So be looking for that over the next few weeks. This month is the reading month, and we're going to be talking about satire books, I think, Lord willing, this coming week. So, or satire in general. The Bible has a lot of satire in it, by the way. You may not have noticed that. So here we are with my 10 books that I would like to take with me on a desert island. Again, let me go through the basics for you a little bit with regard to the standards that I'm putting in place. The Bible does not count. We'll come back to that in a second. And no books that help you build satellite dishes or boats or, you know, anything like that that might get you off the island. The idea is you're going to stay there, and you're going to stay there for a while. So which books would I like to have? My general criteria was I would like to have something that will ennoble me, something that will make me a better person, that works on me, that allows me to work on me, something that would keep me occupied and engaged long-term kind of way. So the bigger the book is, the better it's going to be. I really didn't want to take anything with me that wasn't a known quantity. And I hinted at a couple of books in the previous show. Some of those will show up. Some of them may not. I talked about Atomic Habits a little bit. I wanted to make room for Atomic Habits. I couldn't make it work. I can't help thinking that disciplinary issues would be something I'd really need to work on, and having Atomic Habits would help with that. A terrific book with regard to training yourself in a good way of thinking. But then again, maybe if I'm only spending 10 or 15 hours a week doing anything productive and most of it's going to be reading, well, then maybe I can afford to waste a little time. But anyway, I left Atomic Habits by James Clear aside. I barely did not include Complete Surrender. I'll go ahead and give you a visual of that if you're watching the video. Complete Surrender, the biography or a biography by Julian Wilson of Eric Little. I have two biographies of Eric Little. Neither of them are very much. They're pretty small, basically, but a tremendous, tremendous story, and one that helps remind me how blessed I am and how persecuted servants of God have been over the years, and the willingness of somebody to give up a gold medal, or at least a chance at a gold medal, because of a spiritual principle. That is a character trait that I long to have. I hope I would be able to make a decision like that. We'll probably never know because my Olympic competitive days are pretty much behind me. But Complete Surrender is a really good book. It's too short to bring with me on the desert island trip, I think, though. Okay, here's the list. Number one is the only book I don't have on me here. Number one is Watership Down by Richard Adams. And I'm a little disturbed because it should be here. A while back, I made a list of my very favorite book. Well, I think it was the best. The theme was best, and the best book that I've ever read, other than the Bible, again, is difficult to quantify. But if I had to pick one, I said in the moment there, I would pick Watership Down. And I'll stick with that. Watership Down is a tremendous, tremendous book. I read it in seventh or eighth grade, and I've read it several times since then, about this little colony of rabbits that finds themselves displaced, and they find themselves in this new environment and new enemies and challenges, etc. And it sounds like a bunch of fluff, and rabbit fluff, I guess, but it's not. It's really interesting and thinky and symbolic, and you can make whatever kind of application you want to humans, because, you know, stories about animals are usually stories about humans, just in a parable type form. And Watership Down is just delightful. And you can read it on whatever level you want to. I suppose you can just do a light read. You can do thinky. You can do a book club on it. It's highly recommend Watership Down. The second book that I have, I did allude to this on the other show. This is The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas. The Count of Monte Cristo is a movie that I really, really enjoyed. I touched on this on the podcast. I love the movie. It's a tremendous story. The book differs from the movie somewhat. Not necessarily in bad ways. They both have their pros and cons. I like the book. I like the movie. I love the book. I love the movie. Never read the book before this year, and it's a big one. It's close to 600 pages and a really good read all the way through. It is a bit on the money, I have to say, with regard to being trapped in a place where you don't want to be. Main character in Count of Monte Cristo is in prison for 14 years for crime he didn't commit. I'm choosing to believe that I'm on the desert island by choice. I'm not being imprisoned there at all, but whether I were imprisoned or not, I'd want something that would help me remember I'm not by myself. I am not the only person who's ever suffered in the world, and there's a chance for me to take this time and turn it towards something productive, turn it towards some kind of personal development. And once I get out on my own, once I get free from this prison, this circumstance, hopefully I'll be a better person and I'll be able to achieve something noble, something worthwhile. The main character in Count of Monte Cristo took his time getting there, but he did, in fact, turn it to a positive after flirting with evil, as it were, but wound up making some good decisions. Terrific, terrific read, if you haven't read that already. This third one, I guess, is War and Peace. I took this with me on my recent vacation. It took me 6 days to read 1,400 plus pages. It was a challenge. It's long, and I can't help thinking it could have been shorter, but it's not. And maybe if I took more time with it the second time through, I would be able to pick it apart a little bit better. I read initially, it's supposed to be a book about marriage. I did not see that at all. I thought it was about the Napoleonic Wars. I thought it was about Russian military and nobility versus non-nobility, etc. Well, it's about a lot of things. If you write a book that's 1,400 pages long, it can be about a lot of things, I suppose. Maybe if I went back and took my time with it and really emphasized the relationships and took some notes, maybe so I could remember more easily which character was which. These Russian names kind of blend together every once in a while. Then maybe I'd get more out of it. Bottom line, I doubt I'm going to be able to devote a week and a half to 2 weeks of my life to reading War and Peace again at some point. Maybe I will. Who knows? It was worth 6 days, though, to get through it the first time. And now I can say I read War and Peace, which is something. I counted seven books this year that I've read that were 500 pages or more, counting War and Peace only once. And this was not my favorite of those by any means. It certainly wasn't my least favorite. I'll save that for my most disappointing lists, which book that was. It'll be at the top of the list, I guarantee you that. But War and Peace is worth it. If you find yourself with some extra time, and if you're patient, and if you're into Russian novels at all, War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy is worth the effort. Speaking of Russian novels, Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. I read this a couple of years ago. This is my first Russian novel. War and Peace is my second. And I didn't know quite what to expect. I figured if I'm going to be serious about reading, I ought to read something Russian. I ought to read something long. I just kind of commit to it. And I'd heard wonderful things. Jordan Peterson is a big fan of Crime and Punishment. So I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. And I think I mentioned before in some other episode of the podcast, I was surprised at how readable it is, how accessible it is, how practical, how religious it is. There's a long and storied religious tradition in Russia that has been deliberately dampened over the last 100 years or so. But culturally, the Russians were very receptive to the gospel, very interested in spiritual things. And I think it's worth the effort. At least give it a shot if you have not already. Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. This is The Character of Jesus by S.E. Jefferson. It is on loan, but I found out recently it is available on various online secondhand bookstore sites. And so I'm going to hunt me down a copy of it and get it so I can return this one. I don't want to be without this, though. This is a tremendous series of lessons by Charles Edward Jefferson on the character of Jesus, just talking about what it means to be Jesus, study about his optimism, his trust, his originality, his reasonableness, his sincerity, some things that are, in a sense, fundamental. You think about Jesus and what he means to us in our daily walk. You figure Jesus is our example, therefore we'll be like him. Well, in what way? Well, we won't kill people and we won't steal things and we won't commit adultery. Well, that's fine as far as that goes. Can we dig deeper than that? And Mr. Jefferson and his lessons did a really, really good job with that. A presentation different than the presentations I've seen. Obviously, every preacher has preached lessons about how we need to be more like Jesus in this area or that area, and that's fine. But I really like the way that Jefferson did it in his material. This is from like over 100 years ago and still rings true. Well, the Bible's a lot older than that, obviously, and the Bible still rings true too. So why should we be surprised? Anyway, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, and one is missing. That makes 5 books that we've gone through. I have 5 more to go. This is Tried by Fire by William J. Bennett. William Bennett was a big voice for morality and getting back to Bible-centered basics in our culture, a real cultural warrior, especially from the 80s and the 90s, served in Ronald Reagan's cabinet, I believe, if I remember right. I think he's still around, but this is a collection of stories from the first 1,000 years of the church, those who fought and those who paid the penalty, and many of whom died, in fact, because they stood for their faith, because they are willing to stand up for what is right and good at a great cost. And this is one of the great testimonies to the power of the gospel, that people are willing to give it their all. Dying for a cause is, I wouldn't say common to man necessarily, but not necessarily unusual. People have causes that they will die for. What makes the gospel remarkable is the first martyrs were dying for a cause that, if it was fake, they knew it was fake. Stephen, James, people like that, Peter, who died for something that they had eyewitness testimony to, that they were there for. If it was a false story, they knew it was false, and they died for it anyway. And that that mantle has been passed down from generation to generation. And the willingness for people to give their all, to give everything, literally everything, in the cause that they thought was worth it is inspiring to us. And our society, of course, we're not asked to give at that level, not in America anyway, maybe in other places. But I think that kind of fortitude, that kind of courage would come in handy if I were all by myself. Starting feeling a little sorry for myself. That'll be a theme. We'll come back to that more than once. The idea that all is not lost. I'm all by myself. Woe is me. No, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be on this desert island, and I'm blessed to have God with me here. I'm never deserted when Jesus is with me. It embarrasses me to think how long I worked over this list before I thought of putting a hymnal on the list. If I'm going to have 10 books, one of them should be a hymnal, that's for sure. I have Psalms, Hymns, and Spiritual Songs here. This is not the hymnal that we use at Lakewoods Drive, but it's a good one. If I had to choose a hymnal of all the very, very good hymnals that are out there, this probably would be the one that I choose. just because there's a lot of hymns in it. They're all good, some more to my taste than others, obviously. But you don't have to be in a church house to sing hymns. You don't have to be surrounded by believers. And you certainly don't have to have musical instruments to lift up a joyful noise to the Lord. And having some words in front of me that I wouldn't have to trust my memory, I can probably remember, 200 or 300 hymns if I really put my mind to it. But having them there in front of me that I can sing and I can even learn more of them, and I don't have anybody to criticize my singing or say I'm singing too loud or anything like that, that would absolutely be a good use of time. I said no Bibles. I didn't say no hymnals. So Psalms, Hymns, and Spiritual Songs, that would be a great one to put in the backpack. Absolutely worth the space that it would occupy. I said that if there was going to be a book that I had not read that I would take with me, likely it would be the Gulag Archipelago. I haven't changed my mind on that. This book is intimidating. I'm not going to lie to you. That's why I haven't read it. And it's well over 500 pages. I think we're talking about, plus 600 plus pages. If you don't know the story, Alexander Solzhenitsyn was a Soviet dissident. He was in the Gulags, basically Soviet prison camps for an extended period of time, wound up getting released, wrote all of his thoughts down, compiled them, and eventually translated them and gave it to us. Every once in a while, I start feeling sorry for myself. I start thinking that maybe my life is pretty rough. I've never been in prison. I've never been in a prison camp. I've never been persecuted seriously for my beliefs, religious beliefs or other beliefs. Seeing what people are capable of doing in times of hardship, capable of doing in times of distress and concern and outright opposition, that is inspiring to me. And I think that I'll probably have some down days on my desert island. I'll be honest with you. Being isolated on a desert island has a lot of appeal for me. I'd rather Tracy be there with me, of course, and the girls, and maybe my son-in-law, I don't know. But having a small crowd, sure, that would be fine. But at some point, it's going to be a drain. It's going to be difficult, and the self-pity is going to sneak in there. People have endured a lot more than I've ever endured on a desert island or anywhere else. And standing for what you believe in, being willing to suffer, again, like we were talking about with Tried by Fire, that is a lesson that I need to learn. And apparently, I think I need to learn it more than once. So I'll be glad to take both of those books on my desert island trip. This is one book. I think we have two to go, and this is one of them. This is The Life of Samuel Johnson by Boswell. I got this really nifty box set at a used bookstore for a very discounted price. I have not read this, but I have read excerpts, and the excerpts that I read were wonderful. If you don't know the story, Samuel Johnson is an English philosopher / linguist / political figure / publisher. People did everything back then. And he was famous in his day even. He really was the first one to put together a popular dictionary in the English language and was basically the man to know in England in the 1760s, 1770s, 1780s. And he made the acquaintance of a young man named Boswell. Boswell was enamored of Johnson and followed him around everywhere, taking notes, and eventually put his life story together with a great deal of cooperation from Johnson himself. Johnson was a very clever fellow, a lot of great turns of phrase, very witty. The excerpts that I have read would indicate that two volumes of this would be absolutely worth reading. Johnson was the kind of fellow that you got smarter because you were in the room with him, it seems like. And I love being around people like that. I love being around people who value people like that. So I think that Mr. Boswell would do me a great service by telling me more about Samuel Johnson. This is exactly the kind of book purchase that I will buy because it looks great on the shelf and because I really want to read it. And one of these days I will read it, and I'll sit there for 20 years and I'll never read it. And going on the desert island would be a perfect opportunity for me to take this with me and read The Life of Johnson. I would like to do that. Maybe I'll do it anyway, even if I don't go on a desert island. I hope that I do anyway, because it's a tremendous story and a very interesting read. These books are not in any kind of order other than size, by the way. I had them stacked up next to my laptop over here. And so I put the big ones down at the bottom and the little ones at the top. That's the order, if you were curious about that. The last one is the biggest one, at least it's the bulkiest one, and that is Michener. And Texas and Centennial and Alaska, depending on which one I've read most recently, are my three favorite Michener books. I just recently found a discounted copy of Poland, and I've never read that one before, so I'm interested in that. If I had to pick one, and there are no desert islands in Texas, so I'm assuming that I won't be in Texas. I'll probably miss home a little bit. And so Texas is the one that wins the tiebreaker. I'll read Texas. Michener has a real way of world building and creating characters and bringing landscapes to life that is unlike any author I've ever known. If you're going to read a 1,000-page-long book, it better grab you and keep your interest. And Michener is remarkably good with regard to that. And again, it's tough to be far away from home on the desert island and not think about my homeland. So if I have to choose a Michener book to engross myself in for however long it might take to read, I suppose if I had to pick only one, it would be Texas. And that is 10 books. And I encourage you to engage in the same kind of exercise yourself. If you have an extended vacation planned, if you think you might one day land on a desert island, think about the books that are special to you and find something good to read. And as I've mentioned before, and I said I was going to come back to this, make sure that the Bible is number one on the list. Make sure that when you go to your desert island or when you don't, the Bible is the one you read the most. That was the rules of the game required me to leave the Bible off, but you don't have to leave the Bible off. Whatever reading you're doing, don't let it squeeze out the most important book of all. Thank you for listening to the Citizen of Heaven podcast. Please rate, review, and share so others can access this content. I encourage you also to join the Heaven Citizens Facebook group. There you will find links to related materials, conversation starters, poll questions, and the occasional special announcement. Also, check out the Hal Hammonds channel on YouTube for even more content. Until next time, be strong and courageous, fight the good fight of faith, and do all things in the name of the Lord Jesus. This is Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven, signing off.